This podcast is sponsored by ExpressVPN.
Hey, Steve, remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? I mean, you type out an important report and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work, which always frustrated the hell out of me just because you forgot to hit save. Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN.
I mean, the thing you have to keep in mind is that every time you connect to an unencrypted network, whether it's in a hotel or in a cafe or at an airport, your online data isn't secure, and any hacker on that network can gain access and steal your personal data like passwords, bank logins, your credit cards, and it doesn't take a lot of knowledge. I mean, this is something that a smart 12-year-old could do with a cheap laptop. So your data is valuable. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your personal info on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet.
Yeah, and the best thing about it is that it works on phones, laptops, tablets, and more, so you can stay secure on the go, Steve. And you know, we are a people who is always moving. We've got so many new products and tablets and little gizmos that we buy, and so having security on all of those things is super important, and ExpressVPN is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge.
So lately, I've had to travel a lot, and that means I was on a lot of unsecured networks working on the critical, highly secured files of the Cinephiles podcast. And if I didn't have ExpressVPN, there could be hackers all over the world who desperately want to get into my notes. That's why ExpressVPN is important to me.
And those notes are gold. We know that for sure. So secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/cinephiles. That's expressvpn.com/cinephiles. And you can get an extra 3 months of free. ExpressVPN.com/CINEFILES. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Cinephiles Live, our monthly show we do here on the Cinephiles YouTube channel. I am the outlaw John Rook, joined as always by my better half here, Steve Morris. How are you, Steve?
I'm very good. But full disclosure, I do have to reveal that I might have participated in an event that might have contained some day drinking before I showed up here. I can neither confirm nor deny whether or not I'm continuing to drink.
Heyo! I hear you. Hey, it's Sunday afternoon. It's 4 o'clock somewhere. Oh, it's 4 o'clock here. That's what we're doing.
There you go.
We are diving in today to Pixar sequels because of the great success of Inside Out 2 and a suggestion from some of our people on the advisory board. Is that right, Steve?
That's absolutely right. This was their suggestion. And it's funny, we started the advisory board because we thought it was a better way to connect with our fans and have more conversations with us. And I don't think either of us anticipated how many great fucking suggestions we were going to get from them every single time we met. And yet that is exactly what's happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, he's been drinking if he's already dropping the F-bombs this early into the conversation here. But for sure, that's right. The advisory board helped us out big time. They've been suggesting some great things. We went over our schedule with them recently. And so, you know, if you haven't joined the advisory board, we highly recommend you do that. You can jump up to a certain level. And I think it's $20 and above, right? Isn't it, Steve? Or $25?
It's $25 and above.
$25 and above. You join there, your patronage. You hang out with us once every month. And we legitimately talk about our love of movies. We have a subject we like to consider. And then we hear from all of you about what you're into. And then we ask you questions about where we're going with our show and what we want to do with our show. And you guys have been incredible every month, having some really wonderful conversations about where to go. And we've taken your suggestions to heart. We've adjusted movies. And like today, we've picked out subjects that you all recommended and are going to tackle them. But Steve, we, as knowledgeable as we may be about movies, and as much as we love animated movies, we know that we couldn't really dive into this topic without the king of animation himself, the prince of the Urban family here, the now defunct Urban family, but also the co-host of the Geek Buddies and one of our dear good friends and one of the favorite guests of the fans of the Cinephiles, and that is our very own friend there, Michael Vogel, MK2. Michael, how are you? Oh, well, there it is. He's ready to go. Look at that.
I have a lot of notes already.
What?
Hey, Steve is drunk. John, talking about defunct urban families. Guys, come on. This is a Sunday. Let's pick it up. Let's pick it up, guys. We're talking cartoons.
I object, Michael. You've known me for 20 plus years. Do you really think I'm drunk?
You're not drunk. Although I think it's funny that you felt you had to admit that. I'm drunk half the time we do Geek Buddies. I just don't tell anybody.
Yeah, it's true. I can hear the sipping off camera before we start. but we are here to talk about the Pixar sequels and Inside Out 2 specifically. And, you know, Michael, you're our guest, so I'll go to you first. Inside Out 2, and then Steve after that. What is your feeling now? I mean, this thing has crossed $1 billion. It's really exploded at the box office. So many people really loved this movie, and it spawned a bunch of articles in a number of these websites saying that although Disney said they are going to be focusing on sequels and it made us all take a step back, if this is what they're going to do with these sequels, then there's a level of excitement now to see what more they can get out of these sequels. And of course, we'll talk about all of them. So a bit of a spotty record at times with some of the Pixar sequels. But what made this one stand out so well and be received so warmly by the fans to the tune of over $1 billion and counting at the box office?
Well, I mean, I remember when we reviewed the trailer on Geek Buddies, we talked about this. Like, we watched the trailer and it was, you know, you got the gist of it. We didn't know the full story, but we got that, okay, Riley's hitting puberty, there's new emotions, anxiety's going to be at one of them. Well, at first, anxiety was the first one they revealed in the first teaser. We didn't know about embarrassment, ennui, or envy yet. And I remember we were talking about it, and we talked about Pixar's spotty record with sequels, Pixar having maybe lost the luster as of late, even with their originals. And, you know, I had said then, I was like, look, I don't know if this movie's going to be good or not, but I can tell you this is a great idea. Mm-hmm. Like, more emotions. We all know what puberty is like. Every single one of us has hit it. It was a tumultuous time for all of us. And if they can really nail that feeling, that feels like a good reason for a next chapter. And I think as we talk about a lot of these sequels with Pixar, and we're going to talk about the good ones and we're going to talk about the bad ones, the ones that work to me are the ones that when you watch them, you go, oh, that was a story that should have been told.
Yeah,
that made sense. That's a reason. And Riley hitting puberty is a reason. You can extrapolate that to say, as long as they get these stories right, Riley's first relationship, Riley's first day in college, Riley's first job, Riley's baby, like, you can literally take this and go, you can give me Inside Out 5 if you keep doing it this way. And I think they really, what worked, and as I've been talking to friends who have seen it, I just had someone text me yesterday who finally saw it and said, well, I feel really uncomfortable because that's how anxiety works in my brain. And so, you know, they got it right. And that's the hard thing to tell people when you're in a studio. You're like, hey, why should we do this sequel? Well, you should get it right. Okay, thanks. Great. Great meeting. But they did.
For sure. Steve, have you seen Inside Out 2? What are your thoughts on the success of this film and why this one works so well and stands out amongst Pixar sequels and really amongst all animation sequels?
So not only have I seen it, but I saw Inside Out 2 with my newly 13-year-old son who turned 13 9 days ago.
Happy birthday.
Needless to say, there was a lot of stuff that related very specifically to things our family was going to. One thing I might disagree with is, like, talking about Pixar's quote-unquote spotty record on sequels, if you compare their record on sequels to the average sequel, I actually don't think, yes, there are some movies that aren't so great. Yeah, there totally are. Mm. But the average sequel, I think Pixar is actually doing much, much better than a lot of the other sequels made by Star Wars sequels or James Bond sequels or a lot of other franchises. I think Pixar is actually doing surprisingly well. Mm. Here's what I think. So I will tell you my reaction coming out of Inside Out 1 was I think this movie is more brilliant than it is great. Mm. And what I mean by that is that it is the conception of the movie and the way they examine the idea of the mind, totally amazing. And when I first saw it, I went, but is the adventure, the story, is that quite as good as the intellectual ideas behind it? As I watched it more and more, and I watched it multiple times with my kid as he was growing up, that the level of brilliance stayed where it was. Mm. And the level of whether or not it was a great film went up and up and up every time I watched Inside Out. I think this movie is unquestionably brilliant, Inside Out 2. And there are things in it where I went, oh, is the adventure the story of Joy and their adventure to try to save, you know, Riley? Is that all firing on all cylinders? There were times where I thought that it wasn't. Whether or not it was brilliant was unquestioned in my mind. Mm. Like, the ideas behind it, how they went and attacked these new emotions and the development of the brain and how we see the world and how anxiety feels and what it does and creating metaphors for all that stuff. It's brilliant. I mean, there's so many things in it that I was just like, yep, yep, yep. And I gotta say too, I'm the same way. Like, looking at how anxiety sees the world, that is 100% some part of my brain. It is not all my brain all the time, but it is some of my brain some of the time, without question.
Yeah, I think the gift of this film is that they understood the experience of a teenager, regardless of gender, right? They made it a universal experience. They were able to make it specific in certain ways, for sure, to a young girl and what she's experiencing. But some of the overall universal things that she experienced could connect to anyone who's going through this time or has gone through this time in their lives. And that's what really connected with me. And the idea of, oh, transitioning from one stage of friends to another stage of friends, how do I do that without messing it up? And then the pressure of wanting to be liked all the time, which is something we know from the first movie, that Riley had issues about this. So to have it pop up in this way, and her emotions, and having her parents have to deal with her emotions, all of that was presented in a way that was realistic and slightly uncomfortable at times, but relatable. And then when things start to get hairy, you actually started to be like, no, don't do that. Don't break into her office. Don't take, oh, why are you doing this? This is just going to make you worse. And when she snaps and has the panic attack, I had no idea they were leading to that. And when they did it, it was so perfectly done. You know, panic attacks are something that I've only recently experienced in my life in the last 10 years. And the way they portrayed it was so honest and authentic and believable and heartbreaking, because you couldn't do anything. You felt helpless watching her and anxiety was spiraling. And to have Joy have that moment to go, like, you got to let go. You got to let go. That's the scary part of anxiety attacks, is being able to let go of the spinning of your mind and find a way to relax and breathe and go through your tools so that you can climb out of those things. I loved that, and that there was resolution. And yes, Michael, as you said, adding the new emotions, all of them perfectly peppered throughout with the right amount for each of them as you went along. And I thought that was brilliant.
I also think, though, and taking a step back from just anxiety, I think one of the reasons that Inside Out 2 works really well is it kind of, like, I've seen some people when they're critiquing it, they're like, well, it's basically the same story. Like, in the first movie, Joy doesn't think there's really any reason for sadness and wishes sadness was just out of the picture, because let's have Riley be happy all the time. And then on her journey, understands that there's a reason that we get sad. You get sad so that you can express how you're feeling, let those emotions out, and then people know to come and help you. Like, you don't get the joys, you don't get the highs without the lows. And Joy learns that lesson. And in this movie, Joy is doing what she's doing. A new emotion shows up. Joy doesn't think that emotion is great. So on the surface, you can look at it and say, this is the same basic story. But I think what's really interesting, and where this movie really kind of takes it to another level, is they add this other element of the sense of self. Because you get to this, movie, and you've got joy and sadness and fear and anger and disgust, and they're really focused on, let's make Riley feel great about herself. Yeah. And I think anyone who is a parent, and Steve, you can weigh in on how you feel about this, is like, you got a kid, you want that kid to feel great about themselves. So like the whole idea of like Riley's sense of self should be great. I am a great friend. I am a great person. And let's take all the stuff that makes you not feel that way and, like, let's just forget about it. And anxiety comes in. And for the entire movie, we watch anxiety grow this sense of self that is not great. But the whole lesson that Joy gets is not just, hey, there's a reason that we have anxiety, which we get to. But all the emotions that come in, anxiety, envy, ennui, embarrassment, they're not any of our favorites.
Right.
None of us love feeling those things most of the time. But what we get out of those is, having those feelings, going through those things, doing some of the stupid shit that we do gives us a more well-rounded sense of self. And the idea that they love Riley at the end for all of her and not just the good parts of her is a different story than what Inside Out is. It's tangential. It's part of the growth of how we all deal with our emotions. But the concept coming out of that movie, which is, and any of this is true, we all love the best parts of ourselves. I love that I am an outgoing, charismatic person who is funny and people like me and I can make friends easily. And that's a big part of my sense of self. But it took going to therapy to be like, ooh, also you're really vulnerable and you get your feelings hurt all the time and you can be a little petty and you can be those things. And so I think expanding into this idea of the sense of self, even though that isn't what people remember when they come out, they remember anxiety, they remember the panic attack. That's kind of the underbelly of the structure of this story that I think makes Inside Out 2 really, really work.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point, Steve. The idea of construction of self became a really big part of that movie, kind of halfway through the movie. And the idea of how do you construct yourself where it's a mixture of all these emotions, but you come out understanding how to navigate these emotions as much as you can as a person of that age. I thought that was really powerful as well, because you can't live in anxiety all the time, you know?
John has heard me say this multiple times in way back when we did Lawrence of Arabia on the Cinephiles, but one of my favorite lines of Lawrence of Arabia is where they say to him, you could be whatever you want then. And then he says, but I can't want what I want. And I can't want what I want incorporates all of these elements into your personality that exist that we sometimes want to deny.
Yeah.
And I think, and I agree with everything Vogel said, and just speaking as a parent, like, yeah, I want to deliver nothing but joy to my kid. But actually, that's not what my job is. What my job is to go like, life is hard and difficult and contradictory, and you're going to be filled with all of these emotions that aren't joy.
Yeah.
And you can get through them. And that, in fact, the bigger joy of life is often getting through the negative thing to the other side. Right. It isn't just like if you just gave someone, you know, Fruit Loops and cartoons all day, that might sound awesome up to a certain point. But in fact, that's not actually going to lead to the fulfilling life, and that it's all the other stuff. It's dealing with the anxiety, dealing with the reversals, dealing with like, and again, I go back to what Mike said about like the idea of the self and the fact that they went from I'm a good person to I'm not good enough, in addition to being brilliant fucking writing, is what we walk around with all fucking day. It is all day that we go through. And I know it, like in the creative process for me, I'll be writing something and I'll be like, this is the greatest thing any human has ever written ever. And then maybe 17 seconds later, I will go, this is crap. Nobody will ever read this. This is terrible. This is awful. And that is what being human is. And that is what this movie was exploring. And it was exploring like how that all of those fears and negative emotions can lead you to make negative choices. And like, this is the real stuff. Like, this is the real life stuff. And this is why I can't give you a objective review of how good I think this movie is, because I was sitting next to my 13-year-old and crying because it was literally the fights we had had 3 days before.
Wow.
You know? Wow. And so it was like literally we had a huge, massive upset with my son 2 days before his birthday, because we were laying down the law in terms of things that needed to change in terms of his behavior and what the rules in the house were. And he wigged out on us, and it was a massive, terrible, frankly, very scary fight. Hmm. And a lot of that was what was in the movie. Mm-hmm. And so like that, going like, oh, this movie is speaking directly to my 13-year-old who's sitting next to me. And then we could talk about a little bit. And of course, when I said, hey, did you see anything that related to some of the stuff we've been talking about? He went, no. And I'm like, fuck.
Well,
it was there.
Yeah.
I swear to God, it was there.
But I also thought the ending was really illuminating, right? Because as you guys say, as you just said, Stephen, as Michael alluded to, like, there is this breakdown that happens near the end. Her friends are still her friends at the end. Like, she apologizes. They don't immediately go, fuck you, you're out of our lives, and burn book time. And right. Like, there's a
there's a sense of empathy at the end there, after the, she asks for forgiveness, after she owns up to what happened, after she talks about what she went through, there's a sense of understanding. And I think that's a really positive part of the ending of the movie, is that's something that's very difficult to do, because when you're the person who is being attacked or yelled at or whatever, sometimes it can be hard if you don't have the proper tools, or you don't really have that really strong sense of self or self-esteem, that when someone is yelling, you take it really, really personally, because it triggers all your own feelings about yourself. And then it becomes a defense mechanism to lash back out, right? And so what I liked about this ending was that her friends really leaned on their love for her as a way of understanding why she did what she did, and then welcoming her back into the group and understanding, like, they didn't tell her until the car ride that they were going to another school. So she, in essence, was kind of on her heels on the way to something she was very much looking forward to. So they had to be a bit understanding about how she reacted to all of it. So I like that it had this kind of bigger perspective as the massive emotional breakdowns were happening near the end of the movie.
Can I just say quickly, for me, frankly, that was a lesson it took me into my 30s, 40s, and even I'm still learning, which is that I think one of the things I always carried around with is that I always worry that my friendships are far more fragile than they are. Hmm. And that I don't give people like you guys enough credit, like that even if I fuck up and act like an asshole, that you actually will still stick by me. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's an important lesson that's in the film that was really meaningful, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and I think, look, when we talk about Pixar,
you guys will stick by me, right?
Roka and I are actually texting on the side right now, be like, does he know? I think when we talk about all the Pixar films, I mean, I was thinking about this today as I was watching Quiet Place 2. Like, I think this is a truth about all film. And I think Pixar has just at their best really nailed it, which is the best. We love a complicated story. We love a weird plot that goes lots of places. But emotionally, we just want to hear really simple stories. And we want to hear simple stories that are true. They're just true. And to your point, Steve, it's like, look, when you get into the business of the story, the plot, like, well, they had to go here, they got locked in a vault, there was a sarcasm, and they jumped the sarcasm, and there was this, and they flew, and like, that's all like what you're trying to do to fill that second act of a movie and make it as entertaining as possible. And sometimes that stuff is brilliant, and sometimes that stuff is okay, and sometimes, in the case of like a Cars 2 or a Lightyear, it's horrible. But what really matters when you come out of a movie at the end is, what was the emotion underneath, and was it true? For you sitting there next to your son who is currently going through puberty, you were like, yep, this is true. Like, for me, watching Toy Story 3, when Andy gives Bonnie his toys and I had the biggest emotional breakdown I've ever had in my life in a movie theater, I was like, well, I don't really know what they're hitting, but that was true. Like, that is some, that was a deep thing. That wasn't even like a, I loved my toys. Like, there was like a deeper letting your childhood go thing that like hit me so hard that one of our friends had to basically like hold me while I sobbed at the Grove. So that was embarrassing. Speaking of embarrassment.
Well, I mean, it seems like a perfect segue to talk about these Pixar sequels. Let's move on to the bigger conversation.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, it's mixed in with all these other films as well, but you've got Toy Story 2, you've got you've got Cars 2, you've got Cars 3, you've got The Incredibles Part 2, as we said, Inside Out 2, Monsters University, Finding Dory, Toy Story 4. You've got these ones that have come through here. Lightyear, as Michael mentioned here.
Does Lightyear count as a sequel? Are we calling Lightyear a sequel?
Oh, fine. It's a prequel, but it's still connected. I guess I could maybe loosely keep it as a tangential thing, but there have been 9 Pixar sequels. 9. So, Steve, I get your opinion. Maybe not spotty. I said somewhat spotty. So to keep me a little bit of, give me a little bit of leeway there. But I will say, Toy Story 2 and 3, fantastic. I liked 4, but I know it's not everybody's cup of tea.
Well, I'll argue 4 in a minute, but I have a...
Cars 2, I didn't like Cars 3. I liked a lot more than Cars 2. I enjoyed Incredibles 2, but I've also read some criticism that makes sense that they essentially just reversed the first movie where it was Elastigirl instead of Mr. Incredible hiding who she was. And I liked Finding Dory, really loved Monsters University.
And I did like Lightyear. I'm one of the few that like Lightyear. So I know. Johnny. I know. I did.
You like,
I did.
You like, I love Pixar and you seem to like more than I do.
That's fair. But Steve, what's your feelings on these Pixar sequels overall? What do you take away from them since you seem to be a bit more positive about them, as you said earlier?
So first of all, I would say that the record on sequels in cinema is bad. You know, like if you look, I mean, if you look at, you know, how many, and people will disagree on the exact number, but like how many Star Wars movies are actually great movies? And the answer is, in my opinion, not that many. You know, like if you look at how many Die Hard movies are actually great movies, not that many, you know. Yeah, I go kind of 1.5. I like 1 and 3.
No,
other than that,
I give two. I'll give the full two.
For Die Hard, two.
No, I'm not that Die Hard 2 is good. I'm saying out of all the Die Hard movies, there are two good ones. One and three. Two good ones.
Yeah. So looking at the Pixar record, to me, and I obviously maybe we'll go into more detail on this later, Cars 2 is not a good movie. And I'm much more in Team Vogel of I'm not a fan of Lightyear. Mm. Other than that, for me, the worst that they get is that was fine. Like they don't get into the like this movie doesn't work. You know, for me, even, you know, Cars 3, I don't love, but it works. Incredibles 2, I think works pretty well.
Yeah.
Monsters University, really well. Dory, pretty well. You know, like they're in the totally entertaining world for me. Like, and they're not in the world of, oh my God, this was a train wreck. I don't think there are a lot of train wrecks. That's sort of my opinion about it.
That's fair. Michael, your thoughts overall on the sequels? And if you want to name any specifics, specific sequels, either way, liking or hating, please feel free.
Oh, no, I can go down the list.
Okay, please.
So, first of all, I think all the Toy Story movies, Toy Story sequels are great. Not Lightyear. I'm putting that to the side. But I think Toy Story 3 is my favorite Pixar movie, period. So I think, like, beyond, like,
strong argument.
To me, Toy Story 3 is, like, if I'm going to make a list of every Pixar film that you put up there, Toy Story 3 goes at the top. It is the best. That being said, I think when you actually look at Woody as a character and what his driving want is, Toy Story, everyone always says Toy Story 3 is the perfect ending. Why did they make another one? They didn't need to. It was perfect. But really, they did the smartest thing with Toy Story 4 that they could do, which is it was a nice bow to say, oh, and all the toys went to go with Bonnie. But Woody's thing was, I'm Andy's toy. Like, I'm Andy's favorite toy. I am the toy. It is my responsibility to make sure that everything works. So to put him in a position where you're like, here's your new kid, and you go, yeah, that's not Andy. Bonnie doesn't like you as much as Andy did. You're not the number one toy. What is next for you is actually, again, when you're like, why does this movie exist? You're like, that's a compelling story. That's interesting to me. So even though Toy Story 4, I don't think is as good as Toy Story 3, I think it's a really, really strong sequel. I think I've said this before on Twitter. This will be an argument, and you guys can all tell me in the chat that I'm crazy. I don't care. I'll die on this hill. I think Monsters University is a better movie than Monsters, Inc.
I'll agree with that.
I think Monsters University is low-key one of the most brilliant Pixar movies that has been made. And I'll tell you why. I actually got to meet the director of Monsters University at the Inside Out 2 premiere. And I was like, can I just tell you, I know Pete Docter's over there. Don't tell him I said this, but I like your movie better than his. Because again, when Pixar is trying to find those truths in life, most kids' movies will tell you, if you try hard enough, you can do whatever you want. And Monsters University is one of those rare movies that comes along and says, you can try really, really, really hard. You can try as hard as you can, and sometimes you're not going to get it.
Yeah.
And you got to figure that out. That's wild to me. Like, when I saw that movie in theaters, that blew me away. So Monsters University, I think, is an A+. I understand what Steve is saying. I'm going to give it three tiers. There's amazing sequels. There's this movie is a train wreck. And then there's the, I don't know why this movie exists. So to me, all four Toy Story movies are great. Uh-huh. Monsters University, I think, is great. Inside Out 2, I think, is great. Cars 3, I will argue, is pretty great. I don't think Cars 3 is just okay. I think if you just pretend that Cars 2 never existed, and you watch Cars 1 and Cars 3, as an arc for an athlete, a movie about an athlete. An athlete going from their prime and being an asshole about it and learning what it really means to win, and then getting to the point where they're a little bit older and they're not good anymore. And what do? They become the coach. Like, if you just watch Cars 1 and 3 together, I think it's a great Lightning McQueen's arc is complete, and I love it. Finding Dory and Incredibles 2 are very pretty, and they're filled with characters that we love. And they add some new characters that are really fun. I don't really know why those movies exist. Like, they feel very sequel-y to me. Like, Pixar does a good sequel. Like, it looks good. There's fun business. There's really funny moments. Dory as a little baby is really cute. Elastigirl on the motorcycle. Like, there's some amazing action sequences that look awesome. But I get out of those movies at the end of the day and I go, I don't really know why you exist. I don't really, there's no truth to me. I don't know what I'm supposed to feel here that's really going to move me. And then Cars 2, Lightyear, the less said about those, the better. I think those movies are just, Pixar is completely off. They missed completely. I'm not a fan.
Okay.
Can I just jump in real quick? Because I think.
Don't just jump in. Speak your piece.
I think Michael has put his finger on like a key thing, which is that in most animated films, or maybe most films in general, it's like what they're really dealing with is the plot and the action sequences, and that's what they're really pushing. What Pixar is great is that they're dealing with theme and character and deep, profound emotion about the human experience. And the two movies that you highlighted, which is Finding Dory and Incredibles 2, I think they do a fantastic job at the plot, adventure, action sequence stuff. And so, and this is why they don't go into that realm of this wasn't a good sequel. The action sequences and the whole way that everything, the mechanism of the movie in both Finding Dory and Incredibles 2 is totally working. What it doesn't have is what you're describing, which Toy Story does from beginning to end, is the journey of their characters and how they evolve. And the deep, and this is what Inside Out 2 does, is like the deep, profound emotion and human experience that we're dealing with. And so in both, I would say Inside Out 1 and 2, the mechanism of the plot and what does Joy have to do and all that stuff is a little bit lesser than, but the emotion is way up there on top.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when you look at Incredibles 2, as I said earlier, it's a reverse of Incredibles 1, but it could be seen seen from a different, if you look at it as a whole, both the movies as a whole, you can see it as a commentary on how when someone else is going through stuff, we're really good at judging them and being upset at them and questioning them and all of this. But when it all of a sudden happens to us, we can get lost in what it worked, what's, and not see that we were just mad at our own life partner for the things that we are currently doing now, which is Elastigirl was needing the stroke a little bit. She was getting older. She was wondering where her place was in all of this. Now comes this opportunity to show herself and show what she can do and really stand out, not be in a man's shadow, you know, walk her own path as an independent superhero. And she took the chance to do so. And yeah, she lied a little bit. She, you know, hid some stuff, whatever. But when it all came out, we still had the emotional payoff of it all. I think you can absolutely argue that it wasn't necessary. But clearly from the box office and from a lot of the positive reviews, people enjoyed the experience, right? So end, did you need it? Maybe not, but at least people enjoyed it. Cars 2, I don't think you can make that case. And sadly for a lot of people, even though I did love Lightyear, I saw it three times. And I will see it again. There's something about it that works for me. There's something about Chris Evans' journey in that movie that works for me. And it's heartbreaking when he comes back and it's not his friend and it's her daughter and all like that is, or granddaughter, wasn't it? It's just devastating all around to see this and what he's trying to put together. But maybe they were right. Maybe Tim Allen should have done the voice, although I like what Chris Evans did. But in the end, I still like it for the journey that it went on. It spoke to me in ways that maybe it didn't speak to other people. So, but I, you know, create space for people not to like it.
I know Vogel has a lot to say. I will just say the voice was not the problem in Lightyear. Vogel, go ahead.
The voice is not the problem in Lightyear. It's this whole idea that kids were confused. It wasn't Tim Allen. No, it wasn't that. Like, and the whole idea, I think, you know, as I'm Pete Docter, you know, they're all pretty open. Like, everyone knows Lightyear didn't perform. Oh, well, we think maybe we missed the mark and kids wanted to see the toy and they thought they were going to a Toy Story movie. Maybe there's some truth to that. But I think at the end of the day, and I think you picked out a couple things. Yes. Like the idea of somebody going trying to correct something, yes. and all of their friends go away, and it's their friend, it's their best friend's kid, and then their grandkid, and whatever. There's something lovely and tragic about that. Like, Pixar does some great moments, but at the end of the day, you know, Inside Out 2, it's about your sense of self. It's about right. don't love just the good parts of you, love all of you. Like you take, I would say Monsters University, sometimes you try as hard as you can and you just can't do it. There's these things that happen. Incredibles 1 is my life is not incredible. It used to be great and I'm now past right. my prime and I'm stuck in this life and I don't know what, I just want to be great again. Like you get, you know, Ratatouille just as a thesis on creativity, I could go on for hours about.
Sure.
And I think that Lightyear, I'm like, okay, those are beautiful moments. That's sad. But what is Lightyear really about? What's that truth that we're getting at about the human condition?
You have to keep trying. That's basically it. And you might succeed.
No, it actually, but isn't it sort of more that he has to stop?
Eventually. Yeah.
I mean,
accept the loss, right?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, one of the interesting things, even though that Inside Out 1 and 2 are both about kids, in general, if you look at Pixar movies, they're mostly about grown-ups.
Well, of course.
They're about Marlin. They're about Bob and the Incredibles. Ratatouille is a job creativity movie. like you know, Lightning McQueen is a professional race car driver. They're all about grown-ups dealing with grown-up shit.
Yeah.
You know, about your career, about having a new rival at work, about creativity, about growing old and up, and you're kind of, you know, well, you lost your spouse. I mean, these are all grown-up stories.
But I would argue, and I think your reaction to Inside Out 2 kind of proves the point, is that Inside Out is not about a kid.
Totally.
Inside Out is about a bunch of basically parents that are learning on the job how to parent that kid. Like the way that joy and sadness and anxiety talk about Riley, like anxiety being like, I just want to make sure that nothing bad happens to her.
Yeah.
And I am going to extrapolate every bad thing that could happen so that we can try and avoid all of it. Is like, no, that's a parent.
It's funny. We recently were emailing back and forth with our son's school that they had not come down on him hard enough over a cheating incident. We're like, no, there have to be. So it's literally doing the opposite of joy to be a good parent. Is like, no, he has to face consequences for this thing. That is what he needs at this moment, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, these are the things you look at with these sequels. But I want to, let's take a quick break. We're 30 minutes, so I should take a quick break. Okay. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to read you what they recently said, Disney did, about these Pixar sequels going forward in the future and get you all's thoughts on it. We're right back right after this. This ain't that show.
Shannon singing on Breaks on the Geek Buddies might be the most influential thing on the show, because every time John goes to a commercial break, that's the thought. Should I sing something? No, I need to hum something.
Fair point. Well, I mean, we've talked about the Pixar sequels. Of course, we've talked about the ones that we liked and we don't like. We'll probably get into a little bit more of them as we get to these Streamlabs Super Chats in a little bit. But I wanted to get you all's thoughts on this. Disney CEO Bob Iger said recently during a company's quarterly earnings call that its feature animation divisions will prioritize sequels over original films. When asked by a financial analyst about how the studio intended to balance, quote, leaning on established franchises versus investment in new IP, this is how Iger responded. Quote, we're going to balance sequels with originals, particularly in animation. We had gone through a period where our original films in animation, both Disney and Pixar, were dominating. We're now swinging back to a bit to lean on sequels. And so we've talked, as you know, about Toy Story and obviously Inside Out this summer. I just think that right now, given the competition, the overall movie marketplace, that actually there's a lot of value in the sequels, obviously because they're known and it takes less in terms of marketing. He explained that the renewed attention on sequels is part of the company's decision to reduce output and focus more on quality, whatever that means. And he further added that, quote, the IP that we're mining, including all the sequels that we're doing, is second to none. So, Mike, you are a resident animation and Disney expert for sure. You hear these comments from Bob Iger. It used to be that Pixar never did sequels, or when they did, it was a big deal
for them to do sequels. But in 2024, we're at 9 sequels now. And now there's Bob Iger saying, we're going to be really focusing on more. And even Pete Docter, when he was asked about going back to the well for Finding Nemo, says, there's so much ocean to explore. We're fishing, haha, for more. So clearly they're going into this. Do you think this is a bad business plan, a dangerous business plan for them? Or do you trust, as Steve said, that their record is pretty good with sequels compared to other franchises, that they'll get way more right than wrong if they go through this approach? Your thoughts, bro?
Well, the honest answer is it's a dangerous path. Mm. But it's not a bad. I mean, so first of all, from a pure business standpoint, he's 100% right. Steve said earlier, most sequels are bad. That's true. But why do we keep making them? Is because if you have a bunch of characters that made $1 billion and we all love them, all we want to do is see them again. Now, usually when we go see them, we're disappointed, but we keep doing it over and over and over again in the hopes that we're going to get something good. Like, I mean, the three of us have been friends, we've had this conversation at bars over Wang Bangers, but it's like, what are the greatest sequels of all time? There's Godfather 2, there's Aliens, there's
Jaws the Revenge.
Empire Strikes Back. I would count Toy Story 2 and Toy Story 3.
Sure.
You know, I would count Dark Monsters Knight. University, even though not everybody does. Dark Knight is one of the all-time greatest sequels, but it's a small list of what's actually better than the original. I think to really understand the reason people have such a reticence is to really understand why sequels mostly don't work. And the reason they mostly don't work is because when you're writing a movie and it's an original movie, every character that you create is there for a reason. Like, you have a protagonist, you have a Luke Skywalker, and he's your main character, and all he wants to do is be a rebel, is be a pilot like his dad was, and he's got his wizard who's going to, like, lead him on the journey, he's got the roguish guy who's going to be there, he's got the princess he's got to rescue, he's got the big bad guy, and every character has a reason for existing. And then when you make a sequel, you just have a bunch of characters and you have to figure out something to do with them. So you're trying to come up with a story that actually means something and says something important, but also you got to do something with this character. And what are we going to do with this character? And servicing all the, and then there's always going to be new characters. So now your cast gets exponentially bigger, and servicing all of those pieces and trying to tell something that feels new and different, but a little bit the same, and every character still has a reason to be there. Like, that's really, really, really hard. That's why when Bob Iger says that, people are like, oh, this is horrible, it's going to be bad. Then we see Inside Out 2, where they do it really well, and you go, okay, well, if you're going to give us all the characters we love, but you're going to make all the stories this good, yeah, we're good with that. But even for Pixar, there's only, yes, Pete Docter is right, there is a whole lot of ocean out there. But is there a whole lot that Dory and Marlin and Nemo and the gang have to learn? That's the bigger question.
Right. Good point. Steve, what are your thoughts on this when you hear these comments from Bob Iger and this approach by Disney to be even more sequels to mine more sequels from the Pixar side of things there at Disney?
So I grew up reading comic books in which every month there would be a new Batman story, a new Superman story, a new Spider-Man story. And I never got tired of them or said, please stop giving me these Spider-Man stories. I don't want to hear any more about the X-Men, because it was always involving, because the stories continued. And part of it has to do with the way that movies are structured versus the way that comic books are structured, which is that Die Hard is a movie about an ordinary cop who gets put in an extraordinary situation and proves that he is extraordinary and wins the day. So then you go to do a sequel and you go, how do I put this ordinary cop who we all know is extraordinary back in another ridiculous situation so he can win the day? And it is impossible to reach the same level again. Star Wars, the original movie, is a story about a guy who could be a hero and then he becomes a hero. He can never become a hero a second time. You always have to find new things to do with it. But that doesn't mean we can't do good sequels. And particularly the Toy Story movies show, is that there are still conflicts within these characters. They have not resolved all their own issues. Mm. Woody is a dude with issues. Like, he might be a great person in all sorts of ways, but essentially by the time you get to Toy Story 4, like, that to me is a movie about codependency. and someone who has to like actually leave on their own and become their own person and stop depending on this Andy person or this Bonnie person in order to fulfill their life and say that, oh, I can be my own person, is that it has to come from the characters. If in the very first Batman story, where he wants revenge for the person that killed his parents, he finds Joe Chill, arrests them, kills them, whatever, and goes, I'm cool now, I'm done, then Batman would be done. But guess what? Batman is fucked up. He is a fucked up human who will always have more that he has to do. And so there will always be more stories for Batman. And so to me, I have zero problem with the idea of let's do sequels, as long as they are character based and they are not what you see in Die Hard 5 of, we don't care at all about who this character was. In fact, the person who was afraid of heights in movie 1 is like jumping on helicopters in movie 5 because we've abandoned all conflicts within the character or everything we've established just to create a vehicle for more action movies. That's the problem, is it's not, if the characters have ongoing conflicts, if there's more to explore with them, then fantastic, we can have sequels and they'll work. If they don't, then you should stop and you're done.
Mike, I heard you open your mouth. Did you want to say, add more to this or counter some of the points?
After 25 years, he knows what opening my mouth sounds like. yes. No, I think Steve's 100% right, but that's just one part of it. Because then, you know, as Steve was talking about before, there's all the business. There's all the, how was the plot? How was the this? And like, to me, this is one of the key differences between Toy Story 3 and Toy Story 4. And the reason that Toy Story 3 is great and Toy Story 4 is just really, really good is that Toy Story 3 had this whole cast of characters. So they figured out Toy Story 3 is really about, okay, so what happens when Andy doesn't want toys anymore? What right. happens to the toys? And what does that mean for Woody? And Woody kind of going, okay, are we all going to stay in? Everyone's looking to Woody for the answer. Are we going to stay in the attic? Are we getting donated? Like, what's going to happen to us? And ultimately, Woody figuring out, let's move on to the kids. That's great. And that fulfills kind of what Steve is talking about, which is, okay, well, that's the story for this main character. And that feels true. And that is who Woody is. Hmm. This is a good Woody story. Okay, but we've got Buzz, we got Jesse, we got Bullseye, we got Ham, we got Rex, we got Potato Head, we got Mrs. Potato Head. What are we doing with them? Toy Story 3, the fact that that jailbreak at the end, you've got Mr. Potato Head with the tortilla, you've got Jesse doing her thing, you got Spanish Buzz being in love with Jesse and kind of messing everything up, and every single character has a place to go and a place to be, and all of this gang couldn't do it without each other, works so well. And then you cap it all off with all of them in the trash compactor thinking they're going to die and holding each other's hands because if this is the end, you're who I want to be with, and we all lose our shit. Toy Story 4 fulfills all of Steve's criteria. Like, Bonnie is not...
Hey, Cinephiles fans, Steve and John here. We got something for you all. We got a question to ask you. Why are so many dogs suffering with health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs, and it's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health.
And Badlands Ranch was kind enough to send us some free samples of their Superfood Complete. So what do? We fed it to the dog Archie, and Archie, who normally doesn't wolf down his food, sniffed it, gave it another sniff, and then dug right in. And I'm telling you, he seemed to enjoy it. This looks like a really, really well-made dog food.
That's awesome, Steve. Well, if you want to do what Steve is doing, you can go to badlandsranch.com/cinephiles and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/cinephiles, CINEFILES, today. Hey, the Cinephiles fans. During the summer, Steve and I love to keep Fiji water on hand to keep us hydrated and refreshed, and it really is from the islands of Fiji. Drop by drop, Fiji water collects in a sustainable ancient artesian aquifer 1,600 miles away from the nearest continent,
protected and preserved naturally from external elements, Steve. And as the water filters through volcanic rock, it collects a unique profile of electrolytes and minerals, resulting in more than double the electrolytes as the other two top premium bottled water brands. And John, that's what gives Fiji water its soft, smooth taste. Totally. Unlike some other premium bottled waters, Fiji water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. And this water even has a perfectly balanced pH of 7.7. Fiji water really is Earth's finest water. And since 2022, its 330 milliliter and 500 milliliter bottles have been produced in 100% recycled plastic, so you can feel proud of your choice in bottled water. So, John, I think we should get stocked up on Fiji water this summer, and everyone listening should pick up some today for your next backyard party, beach day or pool day, hike, or even just for your home office. It's not just water. It's Fiji water.
Andy, Woody is feeling left out. He's the toy that gets put in the closet. Yeah. Bonnie loves Forky the way that Andy loved Woody. So Woody's like, I got to teach Forky how to be that, but also I got to figure out what I want. And Bo Peep is like, come with me. So all that's good. And then Buzz is kind of there for the ride. And all the other characters just stay in the RV the whole movie.
Right.
And it's fine and it's cute and you still have this heartfelt goodbye at the end, but it doesn't feel like everything was serviced the way Toy Story 3 did. So Steve is right. Like, rule number one for a good sequel is be true to your character. Who is this main character? What is the rest of the story we have to tell? Empire Strikes Back is great because Steve's right. Luke Skywalker can never become a hero again. He did that already. So in Empire Strikes Back, he's like, oh shit, you know what's inside of me? Space Hitler. I thought I was the hero of the story. I'm fucking Space Hitler's son. Are you fucking kidding me? I'm the lowest I've ever been. And then the third movie is, okay, I'm a different kind of hero, and I'm bringing Space Hitler back. So each of those movies has a different reason for being. And so, like, there's a reason for it, but it's the business of all the other things that takes a sequel from being good to being great.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. Because you look at Godfather Part II, right? It was about Michael expanding the empire. Of the Corleones, this pursuit that he had since the beginning to legitimize the Corleones at some level. So realizing in Godfather One that they'll never respect his family at the same level they respect these other families who have risen to prominence through corrupt means, but they were accepted corrupt means. He turns his back on the entire system and tries to be the mastermind of the whole thing throughout Godfather Two. But in that pursuit, he loses his wife, he loses his family, and really loses himself until you get to Godfather Part Three, which the less said about it, talk about a sequel that's not that great, the better. But these are these things, and you're right. The story has to make sense. There has to be an expansion of the world, and we have to dive into character more and give more challenges for the character to overcome that makes sense within the vein of the foundation that you laid in the previous film. And so I think that's when you're looking at sequels, that's super important to make very clear as you're building the story out so that people are invested in this character's journey as he expands. And some of the things he or she experiences or they experience will relate to what you've experienced as you've gotten older, as you've experienced things in life, as you've gone through stuff, or as a child, when you're going through these level. I mean, because life is a video game. Everything's a level. It's a new, as soon as you level up, there's a new fucking villain. You got to get through all the fucking challenges, and then you level up again. It's a new villain, new challenges. That's life. And so these sequels have to kind of mirror that in their approach when you look at them.
And in the history of cinema, 97% of them don't do that.
Sure.
Which is why people go, you're going to make a bunch of sequels.
Right.
I really do think it goes back to, like, we want to go back into the world. And if you can give me a good reason to go back into the world, I'll go. I just want to comment on the fact that it wasn't just the Toy Story 3, which I'm with you, Michael. Although for me, as both of you know, the movie that wrecked me and turned me into a puddle was Up. And all of you had to comfort me as we came out of that. Yeah. But I don't think Up is the best Pixar movie, despite the fact that that's the one that wrecked me the most. I'm with you. Toy Story 3 is the best. And the fact that all of us were together when we saw that movie, that was something. All sitting in that movie theater when all those toys take hands and go, I want to die with all you.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like, I'm fucking done. And then the remarkable thing about Toy Story 3 for me is that you had a moment, which, by the way, I can't understand how Pixar managed to get away with going, hey, kids, here's a movie where everyone like accepts their intimate death, where they're all going to be burnt alive. It's G-rated. Sure, no problem whatsoever. But the fact, so it has that moment, which is unbelievable. And then it fucking wrecks me again when Andy gives his toys to Bonnie, like that it could have two completely destroyed me moments in one film. That is where, and this is the thing, Pixar can deliver on the adventure. Pixar can deliver on jokes. They're great at that. Pixar, what makes Pixar special is it delivers on the tears.
Yeah, 100%.
By the way, though, really quickly, because this is like our good friend Eric Rogers saw the movie the night before. We saw Toy Story 3 on a Saturday, and he texted and said, this movie wrecked me. I cried so hard. Yeah. And so I was watching that movie, and we got to the trash compactor scene, and I didn't cry. I got choked up, and I got like, well, they're really going for it. But I got really choked up. So as soon as that scene was over, I was like, all right, that was it. That's what wrecked Eric. I made it through. I'm fine. And then the second that Andy was like, I think Rex is the first toy out of the box, he's like, this is Rex. I lost it because I was completely unprepared. I thought I had made it through the hard part. And then they double walloped me.
For me, it was Lotso Bear ending up on that grill. That's what broke me. No, yeah, I agree. The fire scene, I didn't have as much of an emotion when they were handing the toys, but the fire scene certainly got me. And I'm with you, Steve. I mean, you know, it had only been, what, a couple of years since my father had died, or maybe a year or something. And I know that was something Karen was experiencing when we were seeing the movie. Like, that first 10, 15 minutes of Up, for fuck's sake, man, I would put that on the level of the beginning of Saving Private Ryan. Both of those beginnings wreck you in different ways and are supremely effective and surprising at what they're intending to do. And I do believe, in my opinion, the film that follows the end, those openings, isn't as strong as the openings, which kind of works to undercut them a little bit, in my opinion. So, but yes, that opening of Up is incredible.
Not only do I think the Up montage is the greatest filmmaking in the history of Pixar, it is probably in my top 10 greatest pieces of filmmaking, period.
Yeah. And then
what we've been talking about up to this point is like the adventure, and there's the dog that has the voices, and they're chasing and all that. It's fine.
Sure. It's
totally, totally fine and good. But that opening is like destroyed me.
And it does so well because the fun stuff is great. But then when you circle back to that ending where he finds that message from her, like, go and find your journey, or you're like, that is, oh my god, just devastating. So in those ways, you're right, they grab the tears. Fred has an interesting point. He says the song that played when Jesse got left hit me way harder than the trash compactor scene. That's for sure. And this is what's great about Pixar, right? Not every scene is going to hit everyone the same way, and some people, depending on their life experience, will be affected by certain moments in these movies that other people might not be affected as strongly by. And certainly the Jesse scene with that song, I think from Sarah McLachlan, is devastating. Just devastating. The abandonment issue people might have come right to the forefront with a scene like that. Mike?
But I think, and I mean, if we're comparing the two things, you know, we're just talking about, as you guys were saying about Up, which I don't disagree, those first 10 minutes of Up are so spectacular, like just, filmmaking at its finest. And then the rest of the movie is really solid, but it doesn't quite hit the peak of those first 10 minutes. Right. I think what's great about the Jesse song in Toy Story 2 is not only is that sequence just devastating, I mean, just hits you so hard, but it also gets to the heart of what Woody's issue is, which is what makes Toy Story 2 such a great movie. Like, what Woody is dealing with in Toy Story 2 is, all right, he's comfortable. He knows that him and Buzz can both be in Andy's heart. Andy loves both of them. He's comfortable. Life in the toy room is fine. He gets ripped. He's not going to be perfect forever.
Right.
Is Andy going to still want him? Which leads down to this whole, and then you're presented with, oh, here's this guy that wants to put you in a box and put you in a museum so everybody can love you forever. Jessie was abandoned. Her girl left her. This is exactly what Woody is afraid Andy is going to do. And Jessie's like, look, this guy's going to put us all in this museum and we're going to be good forever and we don't need a kid. Who cares? And Woody's entire journey of Toy Story 2 is being like, you know what? Andy's going to grow up. That's okay. I'd rather be loved like this for a limited amount of time by one person than worshipped by everybody behind a pane of glass forever. And that's what it's about. So yes, the Jesse scene is perfect in Toy Story 2, but it also just like digs deep into every bit of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. When she loved it. Oof. Yeah. It's good, Steve. Sorry.
I have thoughts about Toy Story 2, but I have a question first, okay. Which is, you know, you both saw, I'm assuming you saw Toy Story, the original, when it came out, yeah. And then you've probably watched it many times since. How is your feeling about how great a movie Toy Story is from when you saw it, then how it holds up over many, many viewings? I think that's my question. So I'm not saying I love Toy Story. I think it's a great movie, but compared to the oeuvre of Pixar films, how is Toy Story, the original Toy Story, fared?
I think it still works really well. But it's not even about how does it fare in the world of Pixar films. Like, I think Toy Story is to CG. I mean, literally, Toy Story is to CG animation, as Snow White and the Seven Dwarves is to feature animated films. Do I think Snow White and the Seven Dwarves is as strong a movie as Little Mermaid or Beauty and the Beast? No. But literally, the entire industry doesn't exist without it. Like, Toy Story as a piece of cinema did something that didn't, not that it was just here's a great movie, not that this was a great animated movie. Like, without Toy Story, we don't have Shrek, we don't have How to Train Your Dragon, we don't have Into the Spider-Verse. Like, taking computer animation and making it a moat is something that never happened before. Now, you look at them now, I mean, look at Andy and Sid, and as particularly the human characters, but even the lighting and the texturing. Like, it's hard to say. Like, I do feel that if you went in, and I'm not saying they should do this, but if they went in and reanimated Toy Story,
oh,
so
God,
that it looked as good as Toy Story 4, I think the movie holds up. I think the jokes hold up. I think the characters hold up. I think the only thing that prevents it from maybe aging as well as other things is because it was the first CG animated film and it kind of shows. But yeah. I think the character moments and the emotion still work. I don't think they hit as deep as Pixar got later. But I think that hitting like some level of some deeper thing with Woody did work.
Yeah. And I think it's the best soundtrack of all the Pixar movies. And I actually prefer the score from Toy Story than all the other Pixar movies. I love the score in Toy Story, the first Toy Story. I think Toy Story did, I mean, for a first movie out the gate, it is incredible what it was able to accomplish in terms of like changing how we saw animation, the story that it told, the animation at the time that was phenomenal to witness and watch. And as I said, the songs, the voiceover work, and the emotions that it elicited all the way up and down the generations. And I thought that was an incredible first movie. And that's how I look at it when I watch it. It's the nostalgia of it that makes me love it. I couldn't possibly pick it apart and find issues with it, you know?
I can pick it apart, but no, I think one of the things, I think one of the things to, because I think what's the most enduring thing about Toy Story, and it's endured for four films, and we're going to see if it endures for a fifth one, is the relationship between Woody and Buzz. And I think what's fascinating about Toy Story, if you go back and like look at like the history of the making of that movie, is that first draft of that movie, when they first boarded it, Buzz Lightyear was kind of doofy and silly, and Woody was an old, crotchety asshole of a cowboy. Yep. Like, just a nasty character. Not likable at all. And what I love about where they got to, they showed it to Disney, and Disney was like, the fuck, you're making this movie? And they had to go back and be like, they had like that 11th hour, you can only do this when you're young panic of like, fuck it, we worked so hard, this isn't working, now we have to change everything basically overnight. But what they ended up with was two characters that worked a lot better because they had to dig in and find what worked. Woody being a bad guy who was insecure, judgmental, selfish, wanted Andy for himself, and basically tried to kill Buzz, didn't work. Somehow the Woody we got is this lovable guy who still is selfish and insecure and basically tries to get rid of Buzz. Yeah. But somehow those personalities, they made those characters work. And I think when we talk about even the sequels that aren't so great, like Finding Dory and Incredibles 2, the reason that they're not bad sequels is because Pixar really figured out how to like make characters that feel real to us, because they have all of the kind of to the inside out two of it all, the sense of self. They have all the bad shit in there, not just the good shit. Like, they have the bad shit in there, and that's what makes us love them.
They don't shy away from it. And I also think their casting and voiceover direction.
Making Tom Hanks your cowboy helps a lot.
Yeah. I mean, their voice, their casting throughout the entire Pixar movies, their casting and voiceover direction to elicit the performances that they get in these movies is astounding. And the fact that that's not rewarded in any big way from like the Oscars, I think is such a crime. It's such a crime. It's not easy to do. You know?
Totally. So first of all, Vogel, I've been saying actually for years, I actually think that's exactly what Pixar should do. I want them to do a shot for shot reanimation of the original Toy Story. Ooh. Change nothing. Same voice, same soundtrack, same everything, and just update the animation. I think with no changes, just make it look a little better. But that's beside the point. The reason I asked the question is that I actually think that while Toy Story is a great movie, it's Toy Story 2 that makes you go, this is a great studio that can do things that are different. You know, it's just like Star Wars, the original Star Wars is a movie that I love, but Empire Strikes Back is what solidifies them of like, oh, there's something special here.
I think there's a case to be made for that.
Yeah, I think Toy Story, because I totally like Bug's Life. I like it a lot. I probably like it more than most people, but it tends to be a forgotten Pixar film. But when you do Toy Story 2 and you're like, oh, we can go deeper with these characters, unlock more things. Yeah. And obviously the animation has improved 4 or 5 years later, that it's like, oh, they're onto something at this studio.
Well, what's amazing, as we're talking about Pixar sequels, I mean, because Pixar wasn't really keen on sequels, Toy Story 2 was supposed to be direct to DVD.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't even supposed to be in theaters. But then Disney watched it and was like, this is pretty good. It's only like 70 minutes right now. Can you add like another 10, 12, 13 minutes to this thing? And let's put it in theaters. And usually when that happens, that doesn't work out great. And somehow Toy Story 2, they fucking nailed it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's end this section of the show on this question. And I want to bring all these Pixar movies up one more time. If you were to, and this is, I think this is almost all of them, if we're missing Turning Red and a couple other ones, including, but if you were to make, like, if you, let's say both of you were executives, and I guess I'll answer this at some point too, but if you guys were executives at Pixar and Bob Iger came into the office, shut the door and said, all right, I need you to tell me which sequel you want to make next. Which sequel would you make next? Steve, I'll go to you first. If you had to make a sequel from any of the Pixar movies that are currently out there, or another sequel from a strain of Pixar movies that have already had sequels, which one would you do next?
So moments before we jumped on this live show, I was watching episode 9 of The Bear. And I'm tempted to say, let's do a Ratatouille sequel.
Sure.
Jeff. But I actually don't think that's a good idea.
Jeff.
I mean, honestly, I think there's way more with The Incredibles. Like, because it's a superhero show, because, you know, as I said, we never get tired of wanting more Batman and Spider-Man stories. I think the next version of The Incredibles and focusing more on the kids or something like that, I think there's tons and tons of stories to be told there. I don't know that I think there are more Nemo stories. I don't think there are more Bug's Life stories. I was thinking about Wall-E stories because we're repopulating a planet, and there certainly are things we could come up with for that. But no, I'm sticking with Incredibles. That's where I'd like to do more.
Okay. Michael, if you had to do a sequel to any of these, whether they've already had sequels or not, which one would you do?
I mean, I think Steve makes a really good case for Incredibles. Here's the difference is what, there's two different questions in my head, which is one, what Pixar movies or franchises and which are not.
Oh.
Like, Steve is right. Like, Ratatouille, as much as I love Ratatouille, like, it's not a franchise. It's kind of a singular film. Toy Story has proven itself to be a franchise. Incredibles, even though I don't love Incredibles 2, superhero universes, we've pretty much proven that's a franchise. Like, in whether it's the DC universe, the Marvel universe, like, there is an Incredibles universe. and going in and cracking what's the next chapter of that superhero story, that seems like pretty easy to do. Yeah. Finding Dory, I think, doesn't work because I don't know that Finding Nemo is a franchise. I think Finding Nemo is a is one of my favorite Pixar films. I don't know that it's a franchise. Hmm. So I think Incredibles 3 makes sense. Okay. I'm curious to see what they do with Toy Story 5. Hmm. But I do think that Woody kind of becoming this... I don't know if this is what they're doing with the movie, but the idea that Woody has gone from being like just Andy's toy to being like in almost a classic Western gunslinger kind of narrative, like he's now the legend, the toy legend that every toy in every town, in being every bedroom, like has heard tell of this one toy that left his kid and goes around to bedroom and helping people find their kids. Like, I think like in the classic Western sort formula, Woody can keep going forever. My choice for the one that I think should have a sequel that doesn't, which is weird, is Brave.
That's what I was just thinking. I was just thinking the same thing.
Yep.
Brave is a very flawed movie. Yep. I think 50% of Brave is amazing and 50% of Brave really falls flat. And it's pretty much been well documented that that's because it was the first female director was telling a very female centric story. And I think a lot of the male energy at Pixar didn't quite see what she was doing, thought it wasn't funny enough, took the movie away from her, put a bunch of gags in there. And when you watch that movie, sure enough, those gags make that movie fall flat and it doesn't quite work. But there's enough in there that people still love it. But Merida as a character and the world that they created, this kind of magical mystery world and this young princess sort of like figuring out what's happening, like how she wants to lead, what she's going to do. Like, to me, there's a very rich world there that I think could really be explored, that if they did a Brave 2, if they nailed that story, Brave potentially has the power to become a franchise. I'm sure they won't do that, but that would be my vote.
Yeah, it could be like a How to Train Your Dragon type of situation where she, she goes on these adventures, and as she leads her people, what are the experiences she goes through, that kind of thing.
Well, I think this is something. Sorry, this is something that's exactly what's wrong with Hollywood, which is that Hollywood, because I agree with you, Mike, that they're not going to do it because they go, "Oh, Brave is a failure, therefore nobody wants female-led characters of this era in this world. Nobody wants that movie." Instead of going, we didn't do this movie right, but there's massive potential for story within that character and within that world. I think it would be a fantastic idea for a sequel, and it's never going to happen because of how short-sighted Hollywood is.
Yeah, can be. Yeah, for sure. My choice is going back to the world of Monsters, Inc. I mean, we had Monster University, we had Monsters, Inc. Boo is older now. What can you explore, kind of like you did with Riley in Inside Out 2? What can you explore about Boo? Is she now married and her children are now, are Mike and Sully now like haunting her children? What is that? So I think there's something you can explore there. So I would love to see something like that.
You got my brain. Now you got my development brain working. The challenge with that idea is that where we leave Monstropolis at the end of Monsters, Inc. is monsters don't scare kids anymore. They make them laugh because laughter is way more powerful as an energy source than screams are. So now Monstropolis's job is to make children laugh. So the next movie is, what is that? So now
We got to make Monstropolis great again. We're not doing as well as we did before. Everyone's focused on laughs. When we were scaring people, we were a much more thriving metropolis. Now we've got homeless monsters. We got to change things. Yeah, that's what would have to be.
You do Donald Frump, the monster. Okay, I got it.
Exactly. That's what it would have to be. The battle within Monstropolis for control of Monstropolis and Mike and Sully on two opposite sides, having to figure things out and come together by the end. That could be interesting to explore. So just
this is John Rocha doing what all good creatives do, which is I'm going to work out my own shit in this story, and that's the story I'm telling.
If you told me
possibly the things that I think are wrong with the world, if I could make add those in there too,
put it all in there. Just put it all in there.
Exactly. I mean, you can't tell me those incredible films aren't midlife crisis movies. They're fucking midlife crisis movies. So I think a lot of these films from Pixar, the creators working their own stuff out. And by the way, with Bear season 3, the creator of The Bear said that whole season, the current season, is about him and how he dealt with fame and his self-esteem issues about whether he deserves this fame or not. So that's what's been peppering throughout. So yeah, no surprise to see that. But yeah, it would never happen. But that's what I would do if I had the chance to do it. All right, well, let's take one more break here. And now on the other side, we'll answer these Streamlabs and Super Chats from everybody who's been sending stuff in. And they're excited to hear our thoughts on their questions. We'll be right back right after this.
Bloop, 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 bloop. Squawk, squawk, squawk. That was me trying to do the Pixar intro.
I got it. I'm glad one of them.
That's the best.
All right, let's get to these Streamlabs and Super Chats from our fine people who are watching. Thank you all so much. If you haven't subscribed to the channel down below, please make sure you do that. Hit that subscribe button, hit that bell button so you see when we're dropping. Every month we do one of these live shows, so you will get that content plus our regular episodes that we drop on the YouTube channel as well without our faces, but you still get it. All right, let's see what we've got here in terms of comments. Let's drop the first one here. It is from Wiley. What's up, Wiley? He says, I love Cars 3. It feels like Rocky 4 to me, and how it pays tribute to Paul Newman just makes me happy. I think people should give it a try or a second watch. I agree. I like Cars 3. John,
it's thoughts? Like I said, I will tell anybody, if you are not a Cars person, you're like, ah, that's not for me, whatever. Sit down one day and just watch Cars 1 and then immediately put Cars 3 on. Just watch both of them back to back. And man, I tell you, it'll give you some feelings.
Yeah. Steve, your thoughts on this?
So I was so unhappy about Cars 2. And then I went to see Cars 3 and I've only seen it once. And I was like, okay, this was good. And so now I kind of want to follow the Vogel plan and I'll watch them both back to back and I'll probably like it. Spoiler alert though, Cars 1 is, I also think, just fine. It's totally acceptable. It works really well. I have no criticisms of it, but it's not a movie I love in any way, you know?
Fair point. Carlton Rudder says, London calling. Sorry, guys. No question today. Up during the night here in the UK looking after our poorly dog. Oh, sorry.
Aww.
Wanted to show you something. Well, thank you, Carlton.
I hope the dog's doing okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sorry about the dog. That's no fun.
Jonathan Peck throws one in here. He says, with the success of Inside Out 2, do you think the pull that Pixar needed now with their next film, Elio, to bring... Do you think it's the pull that Pixar needed now with their next film, Elio, to bring in box office results?
Maybe. But I think that, again, the thing that Elio doesn't have right now, the trailer that exists is fine.
Yeah.
But again, I go, okay, so like a kid goes to space and a bunch of aliens think he's the president of Earth. But like, what's this movie about? Now, granted, I think we only ever really got the teaser for it. And then we haven't seen anything for a long time. But, you know, like, there's that thing with a Pixar movie, and this is what sequels do really well, because you already kind of know the world and the characters, but it's like, what is this movie? And I think with Elio, it's sort of like, okay, this could be great, but it could be, I don't really know.
Good point, Steve.
If you spend a lot of time with top financial people, bankers, investment people, VC people, they will repeatedly tell you that past performance is not indicative of future results.
True.
You will hear this quote over and over again. I think one thing has nothing to do with the other. I don't think like the idea, you know, that we go that there's a, yes, there is a Marvel brand. Yes, there is a Pixar brand. Yes, there is a Disney brand. But if there's anything we've learned in the last 4 or 5 years, it's that that does not predict anything.
Yeah,
I don't think nobody could predict Inside Out 2 having this huge success. And it will have no effect in my mind on what happens next.
Yeah, because Elemental.
And yet the entire strategy behind sequels defies that logic and says, if people liked this the first time, we have a feeling they're going to like it the second time.
Yeah. We'll have to do less work to get them to take a chance on it. Yeah. I mean, and Steve is right, because Elemental, you know, had legs, but it fought its way to making some semblance of money, but it's nowhere near what Pixar, what Inside Out 2 made. So yeah, we'll see what happens with Elio, because they kept pushing that one, and now with Inside Out 2, maybe they feel that that's going to happen, but there's no guarantee. John Sean Brennan says, hi guys, what's up, Sean? Are there any other studios that have sequels that equal Pixar's? How to Train Your Dragon 2 and Across the Spider-Verse are up there for me. Love you guys, thank you for all you do. I think he means specifically possibly animation, but we could open it up to others. But what do you guys think? Are there any other studios that have sequels that equal Pixar's sequels?
I mean, I love all three How to Train Your Dragon films. I do think they get slightly less good each time. Like, I think How to Train Your Dragon 2 is great. I don't think it's quite as good as How to Train Your Dragon 1, That's also because I think How to Train Your Dragon, one of the absolute best movie that DreamWorks has ever made. but I think Shrek 2 is actually better than Shrek 1. I think Shrek 2 is actually the best sequel that DreamWorks has ever made. I think Shrek 3 is bad. I think Shrek 4 is not quite as good as Shrek 2, but it's damn close. I also think Puss in Boots: The Last Wish is so far and above better than the first Puss in Boots movie that I don't even know how it exists. Like, Puss in Boots: The Last Wish is so stupidly good that I almost didn't go to see it. Because I was like, the first Puss in Boots movie was pretty stupid. I don't want to go. And then I went to go see it and was blown away. I think Across the Spider-Verse is, by any stretch, I mean, you can either say it's almost as good as the first one. I feel like Across the Spider-Verse is like the Empire Strikes Back of those movies. Like, it blew me out of the water. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I think somebody else in the chat maybe mentioned the Kung Fu Panda movies.
Yeah.
Which I don't think any of the Kung Fu Panda sequels are as good as Kung Fu Panda 1, but the Kung Fu Panda sequels just maintain a super steady balance of none of them blow me away. I don't think any of them are spectacular. This was an amazing animated film that's going down in history, but all of them are sort of just fun and entertaining at a base level. So, like, I think that DreamWorks does a good job. Sony's got the Spider-Verse movie under its belt. I don't think it has... Yeah, Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs 2 is not great. Smurfs movies are the Smurfs movies. Does Warner Brothers have any? No, I don't think so. I'm just going through everything in my head. Animated. Yeah, I think that's it.
Well, yeah, with DreamWorks, right? As you said, Shrek. But you've also got, like you said, Kung Fu Panda. The Trolls movies have, you know...
They're fine.
The Big Boss Baby movies have been liked by a lot of people. So they keep... And How to Train Your Dragon, they at least have multiple franchises that get sequels that get released in theaters because they somehow appeal to a lot of people. So I would say that you could make a case, although the Pixars will probably have more magic to them, you can make a case that the DreamWorks animation sequels are just as beloved in certain ways as the Pixar.
The worlds they're good. They're strong franchises. Like How to Train Your Dragon... Okay. Kung Fu Panda,
Madagascar,
Shrek, 1, 2, Madagascar. 3, yeah. Actually, Madagascar 3 is fucking great. That's Madagascar 2, whatever, but Madagascar 3 is so funny. Yeah. I love that movie. And then also, even though it's in the same family, I mean, look, Frozen 2.
Yeah, sure.
People love Frozen 2. Like, some people like Frozen 2 more than Frozen 1, and I think Frozen 2 did good enough that we're getting Frozen 3 and 4 getting made at the same time, so we will see if Frozen is, in fact, a franchise or not.
Steve, your thoughts on this? Anything you want to say?
So, I started our whole conversation with saying that the record on sequels is, in general, pretty bad, but I actually have to amend that to say the record on sequels in animation is way better, because I agree with what Vogel said, is like... The Shrek movies, the Kung Fu Panda movies, the How to Train Your Dragon movies definitely is like, what I think the difference is that a lot of the sequels in live action, they're just like, how do we reproduce exactly the same thing and give you the exact same jokes in a different way? And I think that the animated movies have done a better job of it. And part of it, like, for me, the Pixar level is really, really high to start with. And part of it is just the level of heart that's there.
Yeah.
And I don't think that a Shrek movie or Despicable, we got Despicable Me 4 coming out. We got Minions everywhere. Yeah. It's like, if you deliver on what people want to get out of those movies, and it's at a 15% lesser level than the previous one, that's still a success. It doesn't mean, you know, and this is the thing about, you know, and Michael could talk much more about this than I do, but is like, when you've got a kid and you need to entertain them, there's a certain level of quality. It's like, if it hits that, we're cool. Yeah. So if it has a bunch of silly jokes and it's a lot of fun, and that's what the Minions movies and Despicable Me tend to deliver, or what's the vampire one?
Hotel Transylvania.
Hotel Transylvania. It's like, if we deliver on a bunch of this stuff and have enough funny, cool moments, that's enough for success. And I think for me, I hold Pixar to kind of a higher level, you know, that I want more from them, but I actually think there's a lot of really good sequels in a lot of the other animated franchises.
For sure. And we're about to find out how good Despicable Me does, a four does this weekend. Jonathan Peck says, with you guys talking about Pixar sequels, what do you think of sequels from DreamWorks Animation? Well, Jonathan, we just answered it. So I think, yeah. I think
just rewind the past 5 minutes and watch it again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you could have saved yourself $4.99, but I'm glad you didn't. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Yeah,
thank you so much, Jonathan. All right, let's hit some Streamlabs here. Hoth Security Guard says, Vogel on Cinephiles is the crossover I need to end my July 4th weekend. I am one of the ones who likes Toy Story 4 a lot, but 2 is my favorite, so I'm still bummed that Woody and Buzz are separated, but they're making 5, so we'll see them reunited, most likely, I think.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe, right?
Yes, I'm confident they will reunite.
But I'm curious as to how. I don't know. I think, like, I would love to see if, I mean, they won't do this. Steve is right. There's no way that Bob Iger is going to be like, make a Toy Story movie. Don't put Buzz Lightyear in it.
Yeah.
But I just find like Woody and Bo and that journey so much more interesting that I kind of would love that to be the story. But yes, I'm sure they are going to manufacture a way to bring them together.
Well, yeah, you have to do it right because you can't undercut the way 4 ended. Because I like the way 4 ended. I like Woody saying, this was my family for a long time, but now I've got to do this. Because that's what happens in real life. You have a great group of friends, and you get married, and you kind of go off and have that adventure.
You move to San Diego. I mean, these things happen.
We didn't get married. But yes, it does happen. And you go on this adventure, and it's pretty interesting and cool and has its own things, but you maintain the contact. So I think that you're right. I think they will, like, intertwine in some way and come together.
Even being at Hasbro, these are the types of questions that come up. Like, I can definitely see Pixar kind of going to Disney and being like, all right, so we have this idea for Toy Story 5, and they're going to pitch the movie, and they're going to be like, where's Buzz Lightyear? And they're going to say, well, we just feel like at the end of Toy Story 4, we had this moment, and it was really beautiful, and we don't want to take away from that moment. Like, these two said goodbye to each other. Buzz was like to infinity and beyond, and we don't want them to be back. And like, I just feel like this is the stronger story, and I think people are going to love these new characters, and we got this guy, and we got this guy, and they're going to go, So, okay, so you got to figure out how to put Buzz Lightyear in it. And then they're going to leave and go, fuck. Like, I have been in those types of conversations where you leave and you go, we gave them every argument, and they were like, cool, this is what the brand is, so go figure it out.
Well, and Vogel, you know where I tend to stand on that argument, but I'm actually team studio on this one. You have to have Buzz Lightyear in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, Fredtastic. Oh, by the way, Fred, thanks so much. Fred sent me something off of my wish list. Thank you very much, Fred. I want to tell you publicly, since you're in here in the chat, thank you so much. What a nice surprise yesterday. So thank you, Fred. Fred says, being a shade tree mechanic, I connected with Cars 2 and the Lemon storyline. It also has espionage, deceit, mid, and a belonging for Mater during the success McQueen was having. I like this island I'm on. Yeah, well, there you go. You're on the Cars 2 island.
Respect. I mean, listen, it's a small island. It's a small island you're on.
It is a small island, yeah.
It's almost maybe just like a little, what's smaller than an island?
An isle? An isle, maybe? An inlet? I don't know.
Inlet.
An atoll? So I believe that two people walk into a movie theater, they both spend their money on the ticket.
Yeah.
One person walked out liking the movie, the other person hated it, and you ask who won. So this person, they won on Cars 2, and we lost. It's fantastic you like the movie. That's great.
Listen, I love Lady in the Water. I love it. I don't get it. I watched it recently. I was like, maybe I'll watch it now as an adult. And really realized that I was wrong and I hated it. And I watched it and I was like, no, everyone hates this movie. I still love it. I don't know. And you know what? I won. So I'll watch Lady in the Water. You watch Cars 2 and we are all good.
And I'll watch Lightyear. We all have our islands. All right. Let's see here. What else we got? About two more of them that come through here. Doug Developer, both of them from Doug Developer. Thank you, Doug. He says, I always felt like Toy Story 1 is about not being jealous when your friend is cooler than you. 2 is about living happily in the now. 3 is about moving on from your childhood, and 4 is moving on from your friends and finding your own path. All great films. Doug just reviewed all 4.
Can't argue with any of that.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
It's great. Good job, Doug. And his last one is, the scene in Up that always gets to me was when Russell tells Carl that Phyllis isn't his mom, and Carl has that sudden realization that Russell's dad isn't in his life anymore.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Listen.
Up has... I mean, just to be... just. I was just gonna say, just to be fair to Up, like, it has some great moments in it that aren't in the first 10 minutes. The first 10 minutes are just so powerful. But yeah, I think Up is a great, enjoyable movie. It just never quite gets to those first 10 minutes, but it has some beautiful sequences in it.
For sure. Steve,
listen, if your dad was your scoutmaster who pinned your Eagle Scout on your chest when Carl pins that medal on his Russell. Yeah. You would have been crying too. And then they go to fucking Fenton's Ice Cream, which is in Oakland, which I went to with my family all the time. Look, that movie was set up, and we our dog had just died. We found out we couldn't have kids. My dad was dying of ALS. Oof. Like, that movie was fucking lined up to wreck me in particular. So I will never ever turn on that film, despite the fact that, yes, I agree with it. It's not the greatest Pixar movie.
Fair point. JMB said, Lady in the Water is Roka's Hudson Hawk. Oh, absolutely. I'll defend Hudson Hawk till I'm dead. Absolutely. Anything more? No, I think that's everything. That's all the Streamlabs and Super Chat. So we should wrap up here. So we're close to an hour and a half. I was trying to keep this to an hour, but clearly we had a lot to say about him, and you guys had a lot to ask us about, which we appreciate. So final words here. Michael, final words from your end on Pixar sequels and where we're going in the future with these sequels from Pixar.
Well, I think that, I think what Inside Out 2 has proved, and I think what this conversation has proved, is sequels are hard because it's hard to capture that magic again. But that Pixar has arguably done it better than most other studios and more consistently. Out of all of the sequels they have, I mean, all of us don't totally agree, but like out of all of it, there's only two that even a couple of us think are just the worst. And everything else is like, oh, it was fun to visit that world. It wasn't as great. So if Bob Iger wants Pixar to keep making sequels for a while, and they're going to keep doing it at this quality, there's nothing wrong with a sequel if the story is great.
Okay, done. Steve, your final words on this and where you think we're going with Pixar sequels.
I think that what people think of Pixar as is the company that invented computer animated features is not actually what makes Pixar great. Is that that's amazing, and they did break ground and they did invent an entirely new way to tell stories. But what makes Pixar great is actually in those stories. It's that the deep love we have for those characters, the way they understand them, the way characters like Woody is jealous and makes mistakes and acts out of all sorts of ways that we don't like, the way the character, you know, that Riley is a person who's making bad choices and turns on her friends, that the character, you know, in Up, Carl is mean and isolated and lonely. What makes Pixar great and what makes the sequels that work is that they're actually dealing with real human stuff. And as long as they continue to deal with real human stuff, I don't care if they make sequels or one shots. It doesn't matter to me at all. Is that they're still going to make me laugh and they're still going to make me cry. And that's what makes Pixar great. And as long as they keep doing that, I'm in.
Yeah, I would say the track record of Pixar sequels speak for themselves. And it's up to you to decide what the track record is for you. But I think you can't argue that they try to create these stories that capture the magic of these characters as they move into a new frontier in their respective lives within these franchises. And some of them have really worked, and a couple of them haven't. But overall, I would say none of them are necessarily unwatchable, in my opinion. And I think it's because of the incredible work behind the making of all of these films. And I think it bodes well for where we're going in the future, as you see how great Inside Out 2 is. If this is their approach, their understanding of how to reinvent the material and put it into a new format, and expand the world of these characters and expand the emotional journeys these characters are going on and add more layers to these characters, then I think we can be excited for sequels that are to come. And we don't have to put, as Steve has said, the live action sequel approach to the animation sequel approach, two completely different things. And so I think there's more room to be successful on the animation side. So I think we should be excited to see what we're going to get here down the road from Pixar and their sequels. So that's just my two cents on it. All right, well, there you go. That's our discussion on Pixar sequels and Inside Out 2. Thank you all so much for hanging out with us today. We appreciate it madly. A big, big thank you to Michael Vogel. Thank you, Michael, for taking the time and hanging out with us. It's always fun. Pleasure. I know you just landed, so thank you very much for taking the time. at least let people know where they can find you, what you got going on, brother man.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MKToon. You can also see me multiple times a week on Johnny's Outlaw Nation channel doing our various Geek Buddies episodes and Geek Buddies reviews. We'll be reviewing The Boys and House of the Dragon and The Acolyte and doing our weekly show and probably talking about other stuff. So there's a lot of stuff happening in the world of geek news. We're doing it there. You can also catch my episodes of Strawberry Shortcake Berry in the Big City. Seasons 1, 2, and 3 are currently airing on YouTube. Seasons 1 and 2 are airing on Netflix, along with 4 45-minute Strawberry Shortcake CG specials on Netflix as well. So check those out. And then I'm going to spend the week writing a bunch of more stuff and pitching it around town. So hopefully you'll get more stuff from me very soon.
Nice. Steve, what should we tell the fine folks who've been listening to us and watching us here about the Cinephiles and where they can find you?
Well, we are about to enter into, it's essentially going to be an entire month devoted to Donald Sutherland, starting with our very first Robert Altman film. We're doing MASH, and then we're following that up with, I think, our very first film directed by Robert Redford, which is Ordinary People. So that is two big Donald Sutherland movies that we're going to do. Of course, you can support the show at patreon.com/thecinephiles, where you could join our advisory board. We already talked about that. We have Cinephile shorts, and I know one of our shorts are going to be related to the film MASH. We're going to do a couple of shorts on the TV series MASH. And the only way to get that is on patreon.com/thecinephiles or through Apple Podcast subscription, where you could just click one button and you can get access to all our shorts and ad-free versions of the show. And you can buy or stream every movie we've ever reviewed on cinephiles.net. And I'm on SR Morris on Twitter and SR Morris 1 on Instagram.
There you go. You can find me at The Rogue Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And I echo everything both of these two gentlemen said. Thank you all. Thank you both for a wonderful conversation. And thank you all for hanging out with us here today. And we'll talk to you next time with another brand new Cinephiles Live episode here from the Cinephiles YouTube channel. Take care until then.